Back from the West Coast are the Indiana Pacers, and back from the West Coast, the man covering them for the Indianapolis Stars, my great friend Dustin Dupirak, joining us here on a gloomy Tuesday. But the Pacers are on the beginning of a four-game homestand after six games on the road. Ah, the swings, the ebbs and flows of the NBA schedule maker. How are you today, buddy?
Hanging in there, man. Getting back into it. Just feel like just got back. And you're like, oh, four-game homestand. Okay, you know, lot going on, and a lot of interesting games coming up. Obviously, they got Denver tonight, you know, rematch with four champs, and they've got Philly coming up on Thursday, Phoenix on Friday. They're playing so three games in a row with you know, with teams with MVPs on them. So very interesting stretch. Obviously, you know, a lot of hectic stuff going on. Obviously, the big move in the middle of last week with Siakam. So it's a very hectic, very interesting stretch for the Pacers as an organization in terms of just where they go going forward at this point. You know, where the direction of their season heads. You know, have made a big move, and there's just a lot going on, and it's very much at a inflection point, I think, for this group right now.
We tried to catch up with you last week. Well, in the middle of a six-game road trip, that was a stupid idea. Pascal Siakam arrives, the trade that had been rumored for a few months, depending on who you listen to. I know that he shares an agent with Andrew Nembhard, so he always had his finger on the pulse of what was happening with the Pacers, which I think absolutely helped. Toronto's in a rebuild, and I saw a couple places last week that didn't give the Pacers a very good grade on this. I'm not sure why, because Siakam is a proven all-star. He's 29. He's in the prime of his career, and giving up draft picks that are going to range from 16 to 20, whatever, you can't tell me 4 years from now, 2 years next year, that's going to be better than the bird you have in the hand. Speaking of bird, you get his bird rights as well. I thought this was a great trade for the Pacers. What finally got this over the finish line, and why did they do it when they did it, if you have that information?
That's a great question, because I don't know a lot of that. As far as the Pacers are concerned, I mean, I think you would just pull the trigger on this whenever you had the opportunity.
Amen.
I'm still surprised Toronto did it. I mean, I think that's
You didn't even have to part with Nembhard. You didn't have to part with Mathurin. You didn't have to part with Walker. Yeah, that's a steal for me.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I think it reached the point that I think if, you know, you're obviously going into this hoping that it's not a rental. You know, you obviously enter into this entire enterprise under the assumption that you can convince Pascal Siakam to stay. You know, how much of a guarantee they have on that, I don't know. I mean, I asked Siakam point blank on that, just kind of where his future plans are. And as soon as I said that, Halliburton was behind me and said, "Damn, Dustin, let him breathe. He just got here." and so there's a recording of that out there. But so, I mean, I don't know how far along he is or how committed he is or whatever. But it does not seem like he's at least got an open mind to it if he hasn't guaranteed somebody he's going to stay. You know, which is altogether possible. You just never know what's going on behind the scenes there. But at the very least, it seems like he's got an open mind to it. And your general presumption, your entire theory for the case in terms of building this is that you can, if you get somebody to play with Tyrese Halliburton, they will enjoy playing with Tyrese Halliburton enough to re-sign, and they also have the cap money to make it happen from a financial perspective. So you're not going into this thing that it's a rental. But if it is a rental, it's not a disaster. You know, even if you're operating the assumption that you're only getting him for 3 months, you know, you're losing Bruce Brown, who I think, you know, like they only had him on contract for one more year anyway. It was a team option. They were clearly overpaying him partially because they had to get to the salary floor. You know, they had to give that money to somebody, and they like Bruce Brown, and I'm not trying to disparage him or anything like that, but they probably gave him a lot more money than he was going to get anywhere else. And they had to spend it. You know, they had to find a way to sign somebody, and so many of the other guys that you would have thought would have been targets for them in the offseason stayed where they were, you know, where they could get a little more money to stay, you know, the Jeremy Grants of the world and whatnot, some of the names that we saw connected to them in the offseason. So, you know, it's just as much, I think Brown's a good player, but I mean, Siakam's an upgrade, and, you know, at most, you only had Brown for another year. So even if this doesn't work out, it's not the worst case scenario. You part with Jordan Nora, who I think they were looking to give another opportunity to, because he just clearly just didn't have a path to playing time with the Pacers. So they get him an opportunity someplace else. They still like him. They think he's a good player. They just didn't think he had a shot there. And again, the three draft picks are, you know, 16th or worse in a draft that everybody doesn't think is very good. you know, just as it's just not 2024 is just not considered a particularly good draft class. And you look at it, you know, partly it's hard to say because so many of these guys are playing for teams that, you know, we don't see on TV. You know, it's G League Ignite or it's, you know, foreign players or whatever. I mean, it's not too many college guys are in this group, not too many people you've heard of. And so, you know, I don't think anyone's that terrified of losing what you get at 16 because they're having a hard time playing the guy they got at 8 last year. So, you know, I don't think they see this as the draft picks is devastating. I don't think they think, you know, Bruce Brown is a killer to lose for this guy. And I think they think they could sign him. So, I mean, it's just, it was an easy deal to do for them, I thought. I mean, I'm surprised Toronto did it when, you know, they got R.J. Barrett and Emmanuel quickly for OG and Anunoby. I would have thought they would have asked a similar price for Pascal Siakam. And imagine they did and didn't get it. And I'm really surprised they didn't.
And I think part of it as well is Toronto got future capital, draft capital, however you want to label that, and then they can kind of
Mm-hmm.
And they can make their path with those picks or move those picks on for somebody they like. That's why draft capital is interesting. People hate it, but they love it because if you don't have it, you can't move. And especially teams where free agents don't love to go, you got to have something to move it along. So that's what the Pacers get. We'll worry about re-signing Siakam in the summertime when they are finished doing what they're doing this regular season. But you have breaking news for us here on a Tuesday afternoon, and not the news Pacer fans wanted to hear. We thought, hey, look, Tyrese Halliburton back playing with Siakam in Portland. Well, they give him the night off on Sunday in Phoenix, and we'll be ready to open that four-game homestand. And now what happened?
Yeah, apparently he's out for 3 games. So Rick was on another radio show this morning saying that he's going to be out, and they publicly released that he's going to sit out the next 3 games, and then they'll reevaluate, which is interesting. I mean, they're saying they'll reevaluate. Obviously, we asked Tyrese about, you know, reevaluating. He's like, we reevaluate every day. You know, so, I mean, I think obviously you got to keep open for that possibility, too. You know, that's the tack the Pacers are taking to say he's out for the next 3. There's also always the possibility that maybe it reacts well and maybe he comes back, but maybe he doesn't because maybe they pushed it too far this time. You know, hard to say exactly what's up with that without, you know, getting a chance to actually interview the particulars and or the principals, I mean, and ask for the particulars. And so we'll find out more of this over the next couple of days to find out, okay, what exactly happened here. But one way or another, it's 3 more games you don't have Halliburton. Obviously, 3 more games you don't have your best player, and 3 more games when you're playing against teams that have MVPs, you know, because they play Joker tonight, they play Embiid on Thursday, and then they play Durant on Friday. And you saw on, you know, this past Sunday that Durant is on one. You know, 83 points over 2 games in a back-to-back is insane.
Embiid had 70 last night.
And Durant, yeah, and Embiid had 70 last night. And so it's like, and that's only a whole different level of nuts against Wembanyama. And so, yeah, we're talking about guys that are just literally all world players. You know, just 3 of the best players in the universe are going to be at Cambridge Fieldhouse in the next 4 days. So, yeah, that's kind of a big deal. It's a tough day to not have your best guy. So, obviously, you know, you throw Siakam in the fire a little bit, get him a little bit better sense of how they do things, but we'll have to do that without Halliburton. And, you know, still figuring out. While Halliburton is very good at figuring out what somebody wants to do and how to put him in the right places and stuff like that, it obviously, you know, puts that process back another week, which is, you know, certainly not the best thing for this group.
No, it's not. Dustin Dupirak as our guest. IndyStar.com, beat writer for the Indy Pacers. The Pacers, again, Nuggets tonight on our airwaves starting at 6:30. We'll tip it just after 7 o'clock. Jokic is in town with Jamal Murray and Michael Porter and that whole – oh, just the world champions. And, yes, Embiid had 70 last night, and he missed 3 layups. He also grabbed 15 rebounds. And anytime you pass Wilt Chamberlain in anything, and he did that for the Philadelphia 76ers, single-game scoring record. Wilt, he was Philadelphia Warriors with the 100, so don't get into any of that just yet. But Embiid had 70 and 15, so it's not like he just sat out there and shot threes all day. He did the work. Yeah. And Karl Anthony Towns had, what, 62 last night? In a losing effort, his plus-minus was 0. Imagine scoring 62 points and being 0.
That's wild.
And you're right, Durant is on one. Watching that game on Sunday night, and you threw doubles, you threw size, you threw quickness. It didn't matter. He didn't make a Did he not make a free throw? Was that the deal?
He didn't make a free throw. he didn't take a free throw.
He didn't take one.
The line.
He would have made it if he took it. That's ridiculous.
Sure. Yeah.
And now they come to town on Friday. So how's your back-to-back doing? Well, we get Embiid on Thursday, and then Booker, Beal, and Durant, who got us for 91 on Sunday. Well, they're back in town. The good news of this is they do get a little relief. And I know in the NBA nobody wants to talk about this except me, but Memphis stinks. Bane's done for the year. Ja Morant's done for the year. That can't be a game where the Pacers, though, if they have a tough week, Halliburton should be back for that one. That should rekindle the spirit, because you go to Boston next Tuesday, and then you're in the Garden against the Knicks. There is no rest for the wicked except that Memphis game. So,
yeah, you got to take that one.
Oh, my gosh. Yep. You can't explain that one away. And we know it's tough. No. How happy or pleased or where were they after going 2-6 on the trip without having Halliburton? Obviously, they won in Atlanta to get things started. Great game against – we were up all night watching that one against Sacramento. That got a little tight late in that one, but it was – we stayed up. We stayed up. But then Friday, I think, was a disappointment because Simons didn't play for Portland. You get Halliburton and Siakam back. Is this just the growing pains of putting this new together? Hey, we just lost a couple guys. We just brought a new guy in. Where do they stand after a 2-4 road trip?
Yeah, no, I think that's a big piece, and Portland somehow. I mean, those Malcolm Brogdon, for one thing, is very.
He got him for 30. Gee whiz.
In those games, he got him for 30. Jeremy Grant. I mean, both games Jeremy Grant has played against the Pacers, he's looked like an all-star. I mean, flat out, Jeremy Grant looked phenomenal here, and he looked phenomenal at Portland. For whatever reason, they couldn't touch him. And I thought, I mean, frankly, they did a better job of guarding Durant than they did of guarding Jeremy Grant.
Well, that's why Siakam's here, right? Once he gets settled in and learns what we're doing, that's the need to fill, right?
Sure. No, that's the point. And you, I thought you saw some really good moments there, even against Durant. I mean, he really bottled him up. There was one play right before the half where he like kind of stripped him and just kind of kept him in a box, and you kind of just see like what that kind of length does. I mean, I think he's got a 7'3" wingspan. You know, I mean, he's got crazy arms and legs, which obviously you've seen for years. You know, and it was really, really valuable for those Toronto teams, particularly that first one that he really was an impact guy for, that won the title in 2018-19. But, you know, you got that kind of length, you can keep a lot of guys in front of you. And I think that's certainly, I mean, he could just throw those arms out and bottle you up. And, you know, you saw some of that. Obviously, he can contest some things that not everybody else could contest. He at least annoyed Durant. You could tell he was just like, oh man, this guy, what the heck? You know, it's like, I didn't miss dealing with him, but you know, Durant still was just knocking him down, you know, all the same. But yeah, I mean, you can tell that there is a legit, defensive impact that Pascal Siakam is going to make. And you can really get a sense of that there, that it's real. And that, it's going to make a difference, and it's going to make a difference in the lineups. And I think, you know, Carlisle was saying, obviously, that he had Jairus Walker playing the three, and I think he seems more of an opportunity for Walker here. You know, one, Walker's played well enough. I mean, he handles the ball well. The shooting has gotten a lot better. So I think he thinks he can play him offensively at the three. He thinks he can defend the three. And so if you can put him at the three, that opens up a lot of things. I mean, even if you're just bringing him off the bench, you know, that changes what you're able to do defensively. And it forces them to throw a lot of other things in the air. You know, do you move Aaron Nesmith all the way up to number two, to the two from the four? You certainly want to get that guy on the floor. But, you know, what kind of pieces, how do you move them? Even if you just got to have Nesmith and Siakam together, that's certainly a productive, you know, forward duo where they've been really bad on the wings. That makes them a lot better really quick defending those type of guys. So they have a chance to get a lot better defensively, you know, with him. I mean, like, they're not going to be great. They're not going to be a top 10 defense necessarily, but there are answers that they have not had before. And that goes a long way.
It does go a long way because Walker now does not have to, they don't have to push him to the point of being uncomfortable with Siakam there. They're loaded at the wing position as well, and that will let the kid breathe because he's only 20, and I don't think he's ever been asked to score a whole lot at any level. Especially with Kelvin Sampson, you rebound, you play defense there. We all know how that goes, and the team is the most important part. But it was exciting to see him. What game was that? When he was that late against Phoenix, where he was had knocked down a couple threes, a step back 20-footer.
Both Sacramento and Phoenix. He
great
made some shots. I mean, the three ball has come a long way for him. I mean, a long way.
It looks more natural coming out of his hand, like they've been working on it, and he has to trust it in those big spots. And it's interesting. I don't know what you can ask guys at that level, but Hey, they just they drafted you in the top 10, but they also just went out and got a $29 million free agent that plays your position. Let's go. I don't know. You know, everybody reacts differently to how that locker room moves around sometimes.
Sure. Walker has been really good about it, and the guys have mentioned this. You know, the veterans have been like, hey, not everybody would handle this well. I mean, one thing that has gone a long way for him is that Ben Shepherd's been with him, and those guys have been sent up and down together. You know, they've gone down the Mad Ants together.
Road trip.
And they've, yeah. So, I mean, it's been like that. It's been like, okay, hey, you guys go to Orlando. But also, I mean, in some cases, it's not even a road trip. It's a JV game, you know.
Yeah, good point.
Because they play their home games at Gainbridge. And, you know, I mean, it literally, that's what it's been like whenever those guys have been down and the games I've been able to go watch. I've seen a couple. You know, the varsity guys all show up. You know, Halliburton and Heald and Obi and all those guys come down and watch the game. It is literally like watching JV. And, you know, they're all about him. And like, whenever they do big things for the Mad Ants, it's a big deal. But they're able to do it in their building, and that goes such a long way. I mean, they don't have to drive to Fort Wayne. I mean, again, no disparagement to Fort Wayne, but it's, you know, it's a drive. You know, it's not right there. And they get to, there have been nights, you know, games this year where they've had a game at 12:30. And played there and been on the roster, you know, been reassigned to the big team at night. And it's literally just like playing in the JV game and going to put it, you know, be in uniform for varsity. It's just like that. And that's how it's been for those guys. That's been really helpful. So the fact that they've been able to do that, haven't had to travel, you know, so they were down for Orlando and whatnot. There's been some traveling, but, you know, ultimately they haven't had to travel for home games. He's had a friend to do it with him. They've both advanced pretty well, and they've been able to keep them on a level. Has made things, I think, a lot easier. And he hasn't freaked out about it. He's taken a really good approach to it. He's enjoyed the opportunity to go play. He likes having the ball in his hand. He's able to do that with the Mad Ants, and they let him pretty much play point guard. So it's been a pretty nice experience for him, and he's handled it well and not felt like, oh my God, you know, these other lottery picks are, you know, averaging 20 a game or whatever, 15 a game, and look at what I'm doing. He's done a good job, I think, of keeping it all in perspective, knowing that, hey, this is a team that advanced really quickly into being a contender, and things are different when you're on a contender than when you're on a team that intends to go into the lottery again next year. There's a reason why Victor Wembanyama gets to play all the time, because the Spurs aren't going anywhere. You know, same deal with Brandon Miller, same deal with Scoot Henderson. You know, those guys get to play all the time because their teams aren't going anywhere. The Pacers are. And so you have to presume as a lottery pick that doesn't mean you're not going to play the way a lottery pick usually does. You're going to have to be patient, and Jairus Walker has been.
He has been, and it's shown. Now, it never happens as fast as we want, especially with a top 10 pick, but as long as it's happening, I think that's absolutely the upside for it. Reports flying all over the internet yesterday saying that Buddy Hield and Obi Toppin are on the trading block. Who should fans listen to or pay attention to in these next couple weeks before the All-Star game, before the trade deadline? I know Woj is the official and Shams is the official, but where do these rumblings come from? Is it from the agents, or is what kind of grain of salt should I take these with?
Yeah, take them all with grains of salt. I mean, I think they, you know, I'm still getting a lay of the land, obviously, in terms of just how the NBA works and who tells who what. You know, I don't have a lot of people feeding me stuff at this point, long before it's official. But, you know, I mean, obviously guys like beyond Shams and Woj, who obviously know everything, you know, guys like Jake Fisher and guys like Mark Stein, you know, are certainly worth, you know, listening to. They are pretty plugged in, and they tend to throw a little bit more out there beforehand than the Wojs and the Shams put out there. But, you know, I think a big part of it is just logic, you know, and saying, okay, like, what would you do if you were the Pacers? And, like, what would you be looking at? You know, and there's reason to say, you know, to maybe pair a Buddy with an Obi and see what you can get out of it. You know, because certainly Obi is a lot more movable when you have Pascal. You know, there's not going to be, you know, it's going to be less opportunity for Obi. He's going to have chances, but he's going to be a bench guy, you know, certainly as long as they've got Siakam. And, you know, Buddy, obviously they're getting pretty loaded on the wings, and, you know, he's got an expiring contract. So it's like, okay, like, those are pieces that you can certainly move. So that makes sense, but that, you know, what do they want for them, I think, is a different question.
I think what you need, you are going to see up close and personal tonight and tomorrow. You need a guy like Plumlee or Lopez that can just bang with somebody like Embiid or Giannis or the other Lopez, obviously, in Milwaukee, because you start drawing these maps out about where you got to go and get through Porzingis. This is not an all guards or all wings league as much as we make it out to be sometimes.
Sure. No, that's fair. And they've gotten pretty good production from the backup centers, from Jalen Smith and from Isaiah Jackson. But the question is, do you need more heft?
That's a good word. Bulk, baby, bulk. Buy in bulk.
And you had it in Daniel Tice, and you weren't playing that.
But he was only 6'8". Let's be fair. Tice was fine. He had the veteran part. But I'm talking like, you know, the midget 6'11". The small 6'11",
right.
And I know those guys don't grow on trees, and they're just not sitting around being available either. I'm not saying they're going to stop Embiid, but I think Jackson's great for jumping around and bothering him. But if you're going to bang on him, and Embiid plays 36 minutes too, he's not a one trick guy. I mean, maybe we can bring Edie over for the weekend and say, hey, jump in here and see what we've got going on. But I think that would be interesting. Yeah. The Buddy piece is weird to me in the sense because I think the Pacers are deep enough that if Buddy can handle the role of being the luxury three-point guy, I think that's good for them because they don't really have – you hope Nesmith continues hitting, but he can't hit the volume. Buddy just is a volume guy. But you're right, he can't guard anybody. That's the I get that double-edged sword there.
Right, exactly. I mean, he's getting a little bit better on defense, but even him getting a little bit better on defense, he's got such a long way to go still. And he is a luxury.
And he's not going to improve. He's what he is. Let's be fair.
He's only getting so much better. I mean, he can get better. He can take it more seriously. But, like, he's not going to become a lockdown, you know, defensive player in the time that he has left available. But, you know, I think the shooting is a big deal, though. I mean, the shooting matters. The gravity matters. You know, having a guy that is going to be able to take defenders away, that's going to keep the floor open for Halliburton and for Siakam and for Miles Turner makes a difference. I mean, it's still, I think, an important luxury to have. I mean, I think you got to look at what's out there, but I mean, I think they should still, you know, ask a high price or basically look at it and say, okay, like this, if you can't package them for something big, you know, you have to know that whatever you're getting is something you need. You know, I don't think you're trying to get rid of him just to get rid of the contract and just to move on. I mean, I would rather eat it if I'm them than I'd rather let him walk than get nothing back. I'd rather let him walk than get draft picks, you know.
Absolutely. Because he has a skill set that is not hyper transferable. He can make shots and he can make them in volume, and he doesn't need to be wide open. There's something to be said for that.
And he also, I mean, he can shoot through a slump. Like, he has enough confidence and belief that, you know, I mean, he has gone through stretches this year where he's been bad, you know, where he has not shot well at all, but he's kept going. And, you know, he's a guy like that that just is always going to believe, and that matters.
Good point.
And, you know, have a guy that's not going to get broken that way, that they can miss a big one or whatever. No,
Duncan Robinson would be the exact point you're making. When Duncan Robinson doesn't, he didn't play for 3 months at the end of the season last year. Because he's a kid and hasn't gone through it before, but healed, especially with being tight with Halliburton. I don't think Halliburton is going to let him – if he's involved in making these decisions going forward, quote-unquote, as we've been – you know, that's going to be your franchise quarterback, franchise contract. That's why that struck me funny. And the other part was Buddy's been on the trade block since he came into the league, so that shouldn't bother him.
Yeah,
either.
Exactly. Yeah, he didn't make it through his first year without getting traded. So yeah, no, I mean, I think certainly he's there. You know, they have to look. You know, I think they have to say that he's available. I think you have to. You know, you can't tell anybody that we're just not giving up Buddy for any means. But I think if he is going to have Halliburton in his corner, I don't think Tyrese is going to stand in front of a train for him. You know, I mean, like, don't get me wrong, they're super close. They're extremely close friends, and that's not what I'm saying, that they're not, like, you know, I'm saying, like, Halliburton understands the business, you know, so he understands that, like, there might be a reason where you have to move your friend, but he is going to stand up for him as much as he can and say, hey, you know, this guy is valuable, this guy matters, he matters to our chemistry, he matters to our offense, he matters to the shoot. All of the above, you know, I need this guy. You better give me a really good reason if you're moving him. You know?
Are the Pacers done before the deadline, in your opinion?
I'm going to lean no.
Okay.
I mean, they're certainly going to explore. They're certainly going to explore, and I imagine that there will be at least something. I think there's a good chance they get something I'm not thinking of. you know, that there's a piece they pick up that Rick Carlisle has in his mind that I don't have in mind right now.
Gotcha, you know, gotcha.
That's what I would say is the likelihood that like, it'll make a whole lot of sense when they explain it, but like right now, I can't see it. But on the other hand, I can't look at it and say, well, they don't need this. You know, I mean, I think maybe point guard is about it. You know, that's about the only position I could say like they cannot possibly be helped at point guard. You know, I think they're pretty settled there. Even though Nembhard needs to play a little better. You know, certainly he's a young enough guy.
He's in his second year. Give him a break.
Exactly. So they're not – I mean, I think that's kind of the one place they wouldn't want somebody, but I wouldn't be shocked if they got a secondary ball handler, you know, a two-guard that could be one-ish, wouldn't surprise me. So – and really anything else down that line. If they added another wing defender, if they added another, you know, more defensive-oriented power forward and moved on from Obi, it wouldn't blow my mind. You know, if they added another center, nothing would shock me. In terms of what they would do. I mean, I think, you know, I think someone made a point of just saying a consolidating deal, which is to say that just they've got too many guys to play them all.
Yeah, they do. You know, that's the other point, keeping everybody happy.
Yeah, a move that moves somebody out that they just don't think they're going to really get the playing time for, you know, and get somebody else, but might move two guys that are having a hard time playing and get somebody that, you know, that will have a more easy, clear path to getting on the floor.
Now, when is the trade deadline? When is the All-Star break? I know we just rattled off a bunch of games they need to play before we even get to February.
Sure.
It's not the halfway point. It's just the break in the season. Indianapolis is going to host it. I'll have you back on before we get to that. I just want everybody to have their calendars. The trade deadline, the All-Star game, that's the big deal for February, the dog days of the NBA.
February 8th is the deadline. February 17th is the All-Star game. It's kind of a wild deal. Like obviously, they're at the halfway point now. You know, certainly they go that far forward so that they're past the Super Bowl. You know, it's not about it being a halfway thing. It's about obviously getting the weekend for it to be yours. And now, obviously, the Super Bowl keeps pushing itself backwards. So you got to go deeper into February to be that. But anyway, So February, what is it, 17th, 18th? I think it's the 18th is the All Star game. Whatever the
Sunday that weekend
is.
you'll have a Friday, Saturday, Sunday with all the All Star
hoopla, all the craziness, all the madness, which is I'm looking forward to a lot of it. You know, it's going to be really enjoyable. Saturday night at Lucas Oil, Sunday night at Gainbridge now, so that should be fun.
I did this bit on the air a couple weeks ago. Why don't they put these All-Star games in the Dome to get more people in it? I know they haven't. I did the research. It's been forever since they've been in a Dome. It's been on the – it's like if you redo your facility, which the Pacers have done, you want to show that off. But you can show that off on Friday and Saturday. I'd rather have the Duncan Skills in Gainbridge and then put 35,000 people in Lucas Oil. You would have sold those tickets simply. You wouldn't even have had a sweat to sell those tickets.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Capitalists. I thought they'd want more capitalism.
You know what? I don't know what their logic is. I do know this. My wife got tickets for the dunk contest, and that's what she wanted to see more than.
Wow. So, good for her. I went, though, the last time they had it in Indy. Market Square Arena did the dunk contest, and they had the game in the Hoosier Dome. And I sat up in the bleachers with my dad. And I thought it was the greatest thing ever. Get to see all those guys. Maybe they want to make it too exclusive, so you only have it in an 18,000-seat arena where you keep the riffraff out. I don't know. I just thought capitalists are going to capitalize, but no, they haven't. And if you Google that, kids, you can go back and look at All-Star Game arenas, and you have to go back a while before you find it in a Dome. That they reward all these owners for putting all the money into the refabs and new buildings, so I get that part as well. Hey, I'm going to let you get to work. What a great update. It's been way too long. Thank you so much for fitting me in today. I know it's been busy with the Halliburton story and everything else happening as well. But, we'll get you back on for the All-Star Weekend preview. And before we let you go, who's the All-Star in the Eastern Conference in the backcourt getting the most votes?
Tyrese Halliburton by a lot.
It's hurt his hamstring, kids. Carrying all that money around in his back pocket has hurt his hamstring.
Exactly. It's really you shouldn't cash it all and keep it in your pocket.
No.
Put it in a bank account. That's really the
But that's great that's though because nice. You know what?
Wads of it.
That tells the Pacers, that tells the fan base and everything else. It's just not us. Everybody else is seeing this as well. And that's really, really exciting. He doesn't get any extra credit for votes. He doesn't get a vote and a half just because the Pacers are hosting. He has earned this.
Yep.
On his own, so that's very. And it's almost like what 800,000 more than the next best guy.
Yeah, no, I mean he's running away with it. It's actually the kind of the first. It's wild. He doesn't have the most votes in the East, but I think Giannis and Embiid and Tatum are way out ahead of him. You know, in the front court, but he has a huge gap, and I think part of it is it's really tough to figure out who the second and third guy ought to be. But it's very clear that he's first, and I voted for Donovan Mitchell, but it's not easy between Mitchell, Jalen Brunson, Trey Young, Damian Lillard. Like, there's a long list of guys that you could look at for second, but I think everybody thinks that Haliburton is the one guy among the Eastern Conference guards that definitely deserves it.
Yeah, because you have Giannis, Embiid, and Tatum. That's automatic. And then I guess Brown is the Brown's the forward in there too. He doesn't slide into the two role.
No, he is listed at forward. So it's all
okay.
You know, like there's obviously the set, the ballot is set. So the guys are defined before they.
You can only vote for one of each.
Right. So there was three front court guys, two guards, and so your set is either front court or guard, and I think Jaylen Brown is set at front court. He's the three on that team in terms of how they start because you've got White and Holiday at one and two. All the threes who could technically be twos for most people are set as front court guys, so kind of jams that up a little bit. But all the same, so Tyrese is very, very clearly a one, and that helps his cause.
And it helps, obviously, all the hoopla surrounding the Pacers because we didn't know 2 years ago that Haliburton and Siakam and a new dawn would be shining. We were still arguing whether DeMontis and Miles could play together. Well, now that we have that answer, let's roll on. Thank you so much, buddy, for your time. We'll get caught up next month after the Groundhog makes his big prediction, and we'll talk some hoops coming back in February, buddy. Thanks.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks so much.
Dustin Dupirak, the Indianapolis Star, part two of our interview with the beat writer for the Indiana Pacers, taking you through all the ups and downs of a busy, busy time. When your team is good in the NBA, it's great. If your team is good and interesting, it's even better. And Dustin just painted you a fantastic picture on Tuesday and today about how the Pacers are achieving both, and that is exciting as well. We'll have the Pacers for you next week. We'll come back with Boston. On Tuesday night, the Pacers at the TD Bank Garden to be the penultimate day of January before heading to New York City, the other garden, Madison Square, to take on the Knicks.